Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Everyone, thanks for tuning in to The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest disasters and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the beheading of Marie Antoinette. Here's what you need to know. Marie Antoinette was born in Vienna on November 2nd, 1755. She was the daughter of the Holy Roman Emperor Francis I and Habsburg Empress Maria Theresa. In 1770, at age 14, Marie Antoinette was set to be married to Louis XVI, future King of France. The union was meant to strengthen the alliance between France and Austria, making Marie Antoinette a pawn in a long-standing dynastic battle. Her marriage to the Dauphin was first done by proxy in her hometown of Vienna, a common practice at the time. Then she embarked on a very long journey to Versailles. Before reaching her destination, a tent was set up. She was dressed in French fashion and stripped of all things Austrian, including her young maids and dog. Her name was changed from Maria Antonia to Marie Antoinette, and once she arrived, the formal wedding took place in the palace. Louis, who was only 15 himself, donned a suit of silver, and Marie wore a lilac dress dripping with diamonds and pearls. There were over 5,000 guests, and a crowd of 200,000 gathered outside the palace to watch the concluding fireworks display. At first, Marie Antoinette was met with a lukewarm reception from the French public, who were not fans of the Austrians. But many were excited about the couple's future reign. Louis XV, the Dauphin's father, had been an unpopular monarch, and his death on May 10, 1774, was a relief to the kingdom. It was then that the young Marie Antoinette, not yet 20 years old, became Queen of France. court, Marie Antoinette had a significant role, one that the previous kings had not given to their queens. She chose the shows that were performed in court and supported artists. She was a singer as well as a musician, playing the harp and harpsichord, and a good dancer. She also loved to gamble, and by many accounts, she was very pretty. But most of all, Marie Antoinette was a fashionista. Her extravagant dresses and hairdos were a sight to see and later imitate. At the same time, the French court was one of the cruelest in Europe. Marie Antoinette's every move was scrutinized by those around her. The young queen was not accustomed to the relentless attention and was said to have despised the official rituals of her position, like the waking up ceremony and public meals. For this reason, she often fled to her beloved Petit Trianon, a smaller palace close to Versailles given to her by Louis XVI after he became king. Marie Antoinette's yearly budget for clothing was rumored to have been close to $3.6 million in today's value. That's almost $10,000 a day. As one can imagine, this kind of lavish spending did not sit well with the people of France, who were at the time going through a difficult economic period. To top it all off, there was little privacy in the court, and being that Marie Antoinette's sole purpose as queen was to give birth to the future king, it did not sit well with many that for the first 7 years of their union, the king and queen's marriage was not consummated. This caused incredible amounts of public criticism. Though they weren't particularly a romantic match, Marie Antoinette and King Louis XVI, unlike most other royal unions, were said to have been very fond of one another, and she eventually gave birth to 4 children. In 1778, 8 years after the wedding, their first child, Marie Therese, was born. Shortly after, in 1781, came a son, Louis Joseph. Then Louis Charles, who would go on to become Dauphin after the death of his older brother in 1789. Marie Antoinette's 4th child, Sophie Beatrice, was premature and only lived for a few months. Marie Antoinette was a warm mother, making a point to spend time with her children, but the successive deaths of their 2 children were heartbreaking for the king and queen, and it couldn't have come at a worse time. The summer of 1789 was the start of the French Revolution, after 900 working-class Parisianers stormed the Bastille prison to seize arms and ammunition. A failed harvest had made the price of grain skyrocket, and people rioted on the streets demanding cheaper bread. Heavy taxes were also taking a toll on the French populace. They had grown resentful of the absolute monarchy and, inspired by the American Revolution, wanted their shot at self-government. Tensions were at a fever pitch. At this point, the public perception of the queen had been absolutely tarnished. For years, Marie Antoinette had been the target of libels and caricatures, which portrayed her in very unfavorable ways. Although she had been framed and was an innocent victim, the affair of the diamond necklace in 1785 only intensified the French disdain for the queen. This was an elaborate con that implicated her in a crime to defraud the crown jewelers. In October of 1789, a mob of several thousand stormed the grounds of Versailles. The royal family was eventually seized and taken to the old Tuileries Palace in Paris, where they were essentially put under house arrest. By 1791, it was looking like the assembly would allow King Louis XVI to remain as a constitutional monarch. But after the declaration of the French and Austrian War, the assembly became suspicious that the king and queen were conspiring with the enemy, and they ordered the entire royal family locked up in the Temple Tower. When letters were discovered describing a potential counter-revolution by the king, Louis was separated from the family and locked in a different cell. He was put on trial, and in January 1793, he was condemned to death. On January 21st, 1793, he was executed by guillotine in front of a crowd of 20,000 people. 6 months later, it seemed Marie Antoinette was destined to the same fate as her husband, when in August 1793, she was taken to the Conciergerie, a prison also dubbed Death's Antechamber. At her trial, she maintained her composure as a litany of accusations were laid before her, including treason and incest. According to the prosecution, testimony drawn from her 8-year-old son, who had been imprisoned after the death of his father, the king, said that he had an incestuous relationship with his mother and aunt. There's never been any evidence that this was true, and Marie Antoinette replied to the accusations only by saying, quote, "Nature refuses to answer such a charge brought against a mother. I appeal in this matter to all the mothers present in court." But with a civil war threatening to bring down the new republic, her fate had been sealed long before her trial. Marie Antoinette was found guilty of high treason, depletion of the national treasury, and conspiracy against the security of the state. She was sentenced to death. On October 16, 1793, 2 weeks shy of her 38th birthday, Marie Antoinette was escorted in a cart to what is now the Place de la Concorde. Her executioner had cut her hair short and bound her hands behind her. She was calm and collected as she walked up to the guillotine. At approximately 12:15 p.m., she was beheaded, and thousands of spectators burst into cheers. Fun facts, aka death stats. Contrary to popular belief, Marie Antoinette did not respond to news that starving Parisians had no bread by saying, quote, "Let them eat cake." It is believed that Jean-Jacques Rousseau either coined the "let them eat cake" quote himself in his autobiography Confessions, or that he was referring to a queen, Maria Therese, who was the wife of King Louis XIV and lived about 100 years before Marie Antoinette became Queen of France. Marie Antoinette was the 15th of 16 children. For her wedding, she was escorted to France amid an entourage that included 57 carriages, 117 footmen, and 376 horses. According to HistoryExtra.com, in June 1770, some 50,000 people eagerly gathered along the streets of Paris to catch a glimpse of Marie during her first public appearance as a member of the French royal family. Members of the crowd were so keen to see the teenager that at least 30 people were crushed to death during the frantic rush. The French people nicknamed Marie Antoinette La Trichienne, that is a play on her Austrian heritage, and Chienne, the French word for bitch. With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, Alarmy.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi, everyone.
And our very special guest today is Chelsea Devantes. Did I say that right, Chelsea?
No. But it actually truly does not matter. Devantes. Hi, everybody.
Devantes. So Chelsea is a comedian, a writer, and the host of Celebrity Book Club, a podcast which you should all listen to. And Chelsea, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Celebrity Book Club is basically where me and a guest, usually a very close friend of mine, recap and celebrate and discuss celebrity memoirs, which has been seen as a trash genre of the trash literature. However, they've always been my favorite books. I joke that that's what happens when your nearest bookstore growing up is a Walmart. But they're really great. They're like hidden gems, and they really taught me how to like live life. And they're all really strong women because they're celebrities. You know, even when you're like that trash monster, I mean, she's still a celebrity, right? So she has a lot of power, which means they've all been through some shit. Yeah. And so each episode we discuss a book.
Now, Chelsea, we like to start our show by asking our guests, what is something that is alarming you recently?
Oh, goodness. wow. Well, not a great question for me. I could pick 1,000 things. Literally, most recently is that Yasser, just my love, just sent me an article about how the new COVID strains break through the vaccine, and that was about 5 seconds ago. So that's currently on my mind. Something less than that would be we adopted a dog in quarantine, and the trainer was like, he either has a really quiet breed or he's traumatized from his previous life and he's depressed. And I'm like, no. Oh, no.
From his previous life?
Previous life or previous owner?
A previous life with his previous owners, not his past life.
Okay, so Chris was thinking past life.
I was thinking past life, and I was thinking, so dogs are only dogs in previous lives, and humans are only humans?
Not necessarily. I don't think those are the rules. Could have been...
Okay, so it's definitely a past life, like... Pre-Chelsea.
Pre-Chelsea with his owners. But I love that everyone on this podcast assumed him in past life, which means, like, I love where your head's at.
Do we think that any of us were Marie Antoinette, and that's why our lives are so good right now?
Ooh, does anyone have neck pain?
Ooh.
Not really.
Because they say sometimes, like, mysterious pains are from past lives.
Okay, that's fun to think about at night.
I have mysterious stomach pain. I was probably
impaled.
You might have been impaled by Vlad.
Vlad.
Oh no, poor Rebecca.
Oh, what'd you do?
Nothing. You didn't have to do much. Now, this is the perfect segue to start talking about Marie Antoinette. And I think we first need to start talking about the French Revolution. This is an episode where it really helps if you're a fan of the musical Les Mis. So you'll have like a little bit of context for what's happening at the time. The French Revolution, according to HistoryChannel.com, 18th century colonial wars, particularly the American Revolution, in which the French had intervened on behalf of the colonists, had created a tremendous debt for the French state. The people who owned most of the property in France, such as the Catholic Church and the nobility, generally did not have to pay taxes on their wealth. Sound familiar? Mm. Ordinary people, on the other hand, felt squeezed by high taxes and resentful of the royal family's conspicuous spending. Louis XVI and his advisors tried to impose a more representative state of taxation. But the nobility resisted. And in 1789, representatives from all three estates met at Versailles to come up with a plan for the reform of the French state. But noblemen and clergymen were reluctant to give up their prerogatives. So the third estate, which were the common people, inspired by the Enlightenment ideas about personal liberty and civic equality, formed a national assembly that placed government in the hands of the French citizens for the first time. At the same time, conditions worsened for the French people. Of course, we all know about there's no bread, you know, wanting cheaper bread. It had to do with a famine that happened the year before. So, as we all know, sometimes these things are like bad luck and political, what would you call it? I was going to say like a political pimple waiting to burst.
Ooh, I think that works.
Visceral.
Yeah. It's
disgusting, too.
Ticking bomb, perhaps.
A ticking bomb. That's the common term. So we're putting up the French Revolution number one up on the board. And I think that along with the French Revolution, we can also put up the American Revolution as a catalyst for the French Revolution.
Because they got inspired. They were inspired by the American Revolution.
They definitely got inspired, and they got screwed. They got screwed. Because what they did was they sent money to America because they hated the British so much. They hated them. And so they were like, let's help fund this American Revolution. But then what happens? They spent all their money trying to get back at their enemy. And that backfires because then everyone in France is like, hey, revolution thing sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, I mean, didn't they send us the Statue of Liberty, spent all this money, gave us one of our biggest monuments, and then America was supposed to be their ally, and then we just said, no thanks. Like, thank you for the copper monument that will be our nation's source of freedom, and go fuck yourselves.
Yeah. They're like, you know what? We have a lot of problems. This is not a good time for us. Can we get back to you on that help you need?
Like, I'll totally take the Louis Vuitton bag, like, for sure. But, like, I am dating around. But, like, I do see something special with you. Just kidding. Bye. You're blocked.
Like, it really feels like that. And it does feel like karma, too, because, like, you shouldn't do something to get back at your enemy. You know what I mean? Like,
wait, what? Are we sure about that? That's, why not? Convince me.
I just mean it was passive aggressive.
I'll say, this is how I would reframe it. Yeah. You should do something more successful to get back at your enemy. This one didn't work. You should have done something different.
So the American Revolution was really not that good for the French monarchy. So we'll put them up on the board. Good. We got the big ones up. Now,
should we just, before we forget, put Marie Antoinette and the monarchy up on the board? Yes. Just because those are two that obviously have to go up, right?
Yes, let's put Marie Antoinette herself. So Marie Antoinette, for more than two centuries, historians have really debated whether Marie Antoinette bore the blame of her fate or was really just a victim of circumstance. According to National Geographic, by the time she was executed at the guillotine on October 16, 1793, she had been disparaged as frivolous, selfish, and immoral woman whose lavish lifestyle had increased economic inequality. To be clear, Marie Antoinette was no saint. She believed that the French Bourbon monarchy had been ordained by God, and so she didn't accept the idea that royals were like her, were equal to their subjects. She also wore flour in her wigs, while many French people went without bread. All of that said, she was also a victim of her time. It's really not so black and white.
I just, okay, listen. So I'm coming from the PhD scholarship of celebrity memoirs, trash literature. I just want to say up front, a not studied French scholar. However, it is so funny to me that one woman's dresses and her spending could be like the fall of a nation. She's a great poster child for everyone to hate. A woman always is. A woman can just become the beacon for everything you're upset about so easily. I'm sure she was a mean, selfish bitch. She was also 14 years old, and they were like, you're a god and a deity, and also, like, go on this caravan and lose your heritage and, like, definitely fuck this guy and have a kid or we will kill you. So, I mean, I just don't think she ever had a chance. I mean, she never had a chance. And there's no way her personal spending was the fall of that entire nation. There has to be other things that were worse.
I mean, yes. Yeah, she came in and took advantage, you know, they're like, okay, you want to give me, what is it, $3.6 million in just for, like, wardrobe spending? Like, of course I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take it now. Thank you. Well, it's also so interesting, too, because wasn't there pressure on that? Like, you have to do a wake-up ceremony first off. Wow, what a nightmare.
What is that?
I'm going to have nightmares about that.
Yeah. Try to wrap your mind around that. It's like literally everyone surrounds you in court and just like wakes you up in the morning. Watches you wake up.
Can we put that on the board? I mean, yes. If that happened to me every morning, I'm sure I would become a murderer.
Yes. You know what we can call it is it's the French court. Like the rules of the French court. So the French court was actually particularly, like they said, cruel and also, how would you call it, elaborate? It was the reason for, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but so they all lived together in Versailles. So the whole court, instead, I feel like in the British court, they like went home, but no, not in this court. It was like they were all living in the palace together. And the reasoning behind that was that if, you know, it's like keep your enemies close, I guess. So it was like they didn't want...
It's the original Real World, where it's just like, put a bunch of young people in a house and see what happens.
But it, like, that's a nightmare idea. But they wanted to like keep a close eye so that people wouldn't like start a coup or something like that. And then to like, of course, you know, they had to like one up it. They came up with all of these like rules for the French court, like, and rituals like the wake-up ceremony.
Should we put up on the board like echo chamber or like social bubble? Like, what do you call it when you have no connection?
Well, they're
to
like out of
world?
Touch. Is that what you mean, Chris?
That's
like, they're
sort of
just
what I'm
like
angling for.
Well, is that just like classism or like the rich being like elitism?
Well, I think
like
the
specific, social bubble.
Yeah, I think the specific sort of the notion of this group of people that are the only people you sort of see and socialize with and sort of having to live in that strange environment to me seems sort of dystopic or something.
Yes, the liberal bubble that we read about in think pieces.
Another part of this that is coming to mind, we talked about this in the Britney episode, is how, since the beginning of time, how we love to bring women up and then tear them right back down.
Yeah.
It's just like a desire.
America's favorite pastime.
I think the world's favorite pastime.
Yeah.
Because it happens, we see that happening everywhere.
Absolutely. And to bring in another songstress, we're about to record the Dolly Parton episode. And So I made the whole podcast script, and then people were like, you got to listen to Dolly Parton's America. So I was listening to it, and there's this angle that Dolly Parton exploited Appalachia, and she put these hillbilly stereotypes to the world, and she's at fault. And they really gave a lot of time to it. And all I could think of is like, how many men who are wildly famous songwriters and performers who we would never have this discussion of like, well, with their long scraggly beard or whatever, they were doing a disservice to the South. But Dolly putting on makeup and whatever ruined us. And it's like, and no one is given back more than her. The one message I've really taken away from Celebrity Book Club is that as a woman, you cannot win, which is there's a bit of freedom in that you, it doesn't matter how nice you are, how smart you are, how kind you are, how mean you are. It doesn't matter. You'll lose every time.
Wow.
I mean, that's so, oh my God, that's so true and so scary and also so freeing.
So how do we boil that down for Marie Antoinette? Would that just be like straight up what, sexism?
Yeah, is it sexism on every board? Every board of every episode?
Pretty much. I feel like maybe misogyny. Let's talk about her mom, right? I mean, this, now we're getting into like therapy.
Yes, I love it.
But let's talk about her mom, and let's put her mom, Maria Teresa, up on the board. Her mom is this incredibly powerful woman. She's the Austrian Empress, and she really just knew how to play the queen game. She knew how to do it very well. She had, I believe, 16 children, Marie Antoinette being the 15th of all of these 16.
Wow.
Eight of them were daughters. And she was
gross.
Able to marry... I mean, that was like the garbage pile.
Oh, yeah, the trash pile of daughters.
No, but she made a beautiful meal out of trash, which was that she married them off very strategically that she could create these alliances with other countries that they were either, you know, like... having problems with. So she had this 40-year reign where she was an absolute monarch, and she didn't even cede her power to her husband or her eldest son. She's like, I'm the queen. Like, I'm the
empress.
That's
so cool.
So wow. Strong personality. Yet, Marie Antoinette is the 15th of the children. So they didn't really have, like, super high hopes for her. So I believe her older sister was supposed to get married to the King of Naples or the Prince of Naples, and she died or something like that. The second one then went up. The second one, which would have gone to the French court. So what I'm saying is that at the time, kids died all the time. People died all the time. And that caused her to, since they had very little expectation of Marie Antoinette, she wasn't educated. As like well as her older sisters, possibly. So she, you know, studied religion and other like female you know, moral principles things and like music or whatever, but she didn't have like an academic
education. Well, it's also so interesting. I love when, because back then, yes, religion, morals, music, female interests. However, when those things became lucrative, taken over by men. You know, like, so now that would, it would be, that music would never be a female thing. Men are all the music producers, you know, men are all the music managers. It's so interesting talking about perceived power because, like what you said, and a woman has always had certain things in her toolbox, and we've been broadening them lately, thank God. But that, you know, her mom's power was, I have daughters who are objects, and if I give them away in the right way, I can have power. Or, you know, if I'm sexy enough and he wants to fuck me, maybe I can get him to do what I want for 15 minutes, and that's my power. Like, you just only have certain tools, and Marie, I just can't get, she was 14. It's just so funny to be like, did this 14-year-old girl ruin a nation? Like, I think it was the people around her.
Yeah. But also, how do we kind of boil down that media, that perception of her? Like, what was the French version of media at the time? Like, where did these caricatures and stuff generate from?
Perfect question. So they were called, I'm saying this wrong, but libels. Libels.
Oh, like libels?
Yeah. But they're spelled libelles. Okay. So I call them porno pamphlets.
Oh, I love that. So
in the 1780s, this is according to alphahistory.com, the streets of Paris were also awash with libels, a seedier form of literature sometimes referred to as a political pornography. Most libels launched personal and often lurid attacks on prominent royals and aristocrats, Marie Antoinette being the most frequent target. The volume and pornographic intensity increased after the outbreak of the revolution in 1789, much more than before. The material honed in on the king and the queen. They estimate that before 1789, only about 10% of pornographic libels targeted Marie Antoinette. From 1789 on, however, the vast majority of these publications took aim at the queen.
Whoa, sorry, I'm looking these up, Google image searching these. It's for people who are listening. Like, when she says porno, like you're
I'm not kidding.
Like, these are graphically sexual. Like, one I found seems to be the king riding what is an ostrich, but also an erect penis.
Yes, and I believe that's not the king. That's another member of the court. So that's okay. The even more scandalous part.
Whoa. These are crazy. And, like, Marie Antoinette, spread eagle.
Yes, a lot of spread eagle. There's also some of her having lesbian sex. There are other of like royal orgies. So she's being portrayed in this very hateful way. And let's be honest, like at the time, it's not like everyone in France had an education, right? So If you're getting these, and this is the information you have about the queen, well, then that's what you're going to believe, right? You're not going to, like, read the queen's memoir.
I mean, this woman is really spread eagle every day, fucking her court.
But, like, literally, that's exactly what they thought, Chelsea. So I also feel like we need to talk about the king before we forget.
Yes.
Because the king, Louis XVI, I found something about his locks. Have you guys heard about this?
He
was obsessed with locks.
What do you mean locks?
So, according to biography, unencumbered with learning how to be kingly at a young age, Louis found himself drawn to the solitary pursuits of lock making and carpentry. The royal locksmith,
hair.
No.
I thought you meant what you put on a bagel.
Yeah. Oh my God. No, literal locks.
Because when you said locks, also Chris started running his fingers through his luscious hair.
No, I didn't. There's no way for you to prove that.
So if his path in life hadn't been preordained, it seemed likely that Louis would have been a simple craftsman rather than a king. On the other hand, being king allowed Louis to explore his interests on the extravagant level, using the Palace of Versailles as his playground. So perhaps, I mean, he just wasn't the best leader. Perhaps this, like, I don't know, idea of how the monarchy works isn't the best way to choose a leader.
Perhaps. Yeah. Yes, perhaps. Perhaps that's not the best way to lead a country. a bloodline that cannot determine if someone has any qualifications to lead.
So he's a it turns out, like, by all accounts, he's a nice guy. He's just, like, kind of bad at his job, his role. And he decides to do this thing where, you know.
I'm so sorry. Nothing triggers me more than a very nice guy who is bad at his job. I mean, I would rather someone yell at me. I don't know if I can continue this podcast. I'm so upset.
I know. Well, he's on the board.
The irony being that he gets to be king.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice guy who's just bad at his job gets
to be king.
He just
wants to play with his locks.
I mean, that sounds right. That sounds like the trajectory of all societies. It also, you know, even in your day job, it's because when you're nice as a woman, that's a requirement. If you're mm-hmm. not nice, you're a bitch or you're evil or whatever. All women have to be nice. Men don't have to be nice. So when they are, they're like, whoa, he's so nice. And you're like, that's not that hard of a quality. Like, pick a quality that's, like, more difficult to foster in a human and reward that.
Like lockmaking.
Like lockmaking. So Louis's a dud. But in all fairness, he gets handed down a tough, what do you call it, history. A tough lineage. His dad and Louis XIV, his grandfather, were, you know, massive spend. They're the ones who really put France in debt. And I don't know if this is the reason why, Louis XVI never took on a mistress, but Louis XV had, you know, was known for having many, many mistresses. And
this is the lock guy?
Not the lock guy, his dad.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Lock his guy dad has been, uh-huh. actually, so this is important. So the lock guy precisely did not take a mistress. And this was a problem.
What? Okay? Why?
Yes.
Tell me.
So according to history.com, just as a first lady might take some of the political blame for aspects of her husband's presidency, so too might a mistress receive blame for the king's decisions. This was especially true of Madame de Pompadour, the first woman to hold the title of the king's mistress. This was an official title, an official job. Her visibly elevated role opened her up to even more criticism than mistresses before her. In fact, if Marie Antoinette's husband, Louis XVI, had a mistress, she might have shielded Marie Antoinette from some of the attacks that she received, particularly the accusation of supposed immorality, which were normally reserved for the mistress.
Wow, because they're like, if he's got no mistress, he's having sex with his wife. What a slut.
But I think, you know, they used to use them. Okay, so they needed a woman as a scapegoat, right?
We need a different woman to protect this other woman. This woman can't go to the fire. Put this other woman in the fire.
Literally. They needed this mistress to be the scapegoat for many of the, you know, because then they could be like, oh, he made this bad choice because he was seduced by his mistress, or she convinced him in the bedchamber.
Wow, this is really, I'm really trying to think of modern ways we've seen this where a man having a mistress gave more esteem to a woman we know and let her go on. But I think it's the reverse now. Like, okay, Demi Moore, all my references are celebrity memoirs. Demi Moore. Ashton cheated on her, and we all thought, like, yeah, because she's, like, old, right? And I'm saying we is, like, not we, but you know what I mean. Everyone's just like, oh, yeah, she is too old, and he's a young, handsome dude. Of course he's cheating versus, I don't know. I don't think we gave her esteem from it, but I love the role of punching bag, sex bot punching bag.
You know who comes to mind is Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah.
There's no way we can have an episode about Marie Antoinette without talking about the affair of the diamond necklace.
Okay.
I'll try and give you a quick recap of this, but there's this crown jewel, right, that Louis the 15th makes for his mistress. He dies, and all of a sudden the crown jeweler is left with a super expensive necklace. Shows it to Marie Antoinette. She's like, I don't like it. I don't want it. Now, there's this other woman by Jeanne Delamotte. She is essentially a fortune hunter, and she persuades. So there's this, it's complicated, but there's this cardinal who has gotten out of the you know, good graces of the queen, and he's dying to come back. This woman, Jeanne Delamotte, she sees an opportunity. She becomes friends with the cardinal and says that she is close with the queen. That's what she tells the cardinal. And even though Marie Antoinette has actually never met this woman. So Lamotte then has a lover, Retu de Ville, and they forged these letters that are supposedly going from the queen and the cardinal. And it's like they make up this, I guess the cardinal thinks that Marie Antoinette is in love with him and that he's having an affair. Really, they're kind of like catfishing the cardinal. And finally, it all boils, even to the point where they set up this rendezvous where they hire a prostitute who like is known to look like Marie Antoinette to like meet him in a dark alley or something. And he is like, oh my God, she met with me. So he thinks that they're having some kind of affair. Anyway, in one of the letters, supposedly from Marie Antoinette, they write to him saying like, can you just like buy me this necklace and let, you know, pay for it and I'll pay you back like in installments, because if I buy it, it's going to look really bad. The French people are going to be like, oh my God, she's buying the super expensive necklace. But if you buy it for me, like I'll pay you back and I really want this necklace. The cardinal's like, no problem. buys it, gives it to Jeanne Delamotte or her husband, who's like pretending to be a footman, and they just run away with the necklace. They run away, they steal this necklace. The cardinal then starts writing to Marie Antoinette being like, where's my money? And Marie Antoinette literally gets these letters now and is like, what is this guy talking about? what is he talking about, a necklace and money? Eventually, you know, she starts replying back and she's livid, right, that this has happened. And she demands that they put the cardinal to trial. Okay, so this is according to Smithsonian Magazine. The subsequent trial caused a sensation. The Paris Parliament defied the king's command to convict the duped cardinal and acquitted him. So he got away with it. Lamotte was flogged, branded on her breast with a V for Volus, which means thief.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi? Oh, my French? Do I speak French?
So she gets tossed in prison. And though Marie Antoinette was not on trial, she might as well have been. The queen was innocent, Napoleon observed years later. And to make sure that her innocence should be publicly recognized, she chose Parliament of Paris for her judge. The upshot was that she was universally regarded as guilty. So the affair of the necklace provided further fodder for scandal-mongering pamphleteers and journalists already intent on portraying the queen as greedy and corrupt. From then on, she could do no right. And now we're going to start knocking people off the board after this quick break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, I'll give it to you now. Here we go. Who is to blame for beheading of Marie Antoinette? The French Revolution, the American Revolution, karma, Marie Antoinette herself, wake-up ceremonies, social bubble of the French court, misogyny, Maria Theresa, her mom, lack of education, libels, a.k.a. porno pamphlets, Louis XVI and his locks, lack of sex pot punching bag, lack of sex pot punching bag, a.k.a. no mistress. Okay. Affair of the diamond necklace scandal.
Can we add just something real quick, which is some like monarchies in general or classism or class disparity? Because I feel like it all comes out of like people are hungry.
I guess one thing we should have talked about briefly was the fact that the French Revolution like didn't go well. They had this thing called the Terror.
Yeah.
Right afterward.
Yeah.
Which then enabled Napoleon to kind of like take over.
Mm.
So it wasn't done. I mean, the intention was right. And like many things, like, you know, it's hard to do a revolution.
Every revolution also leaves countries destabilized for other countries, namely ours, to come in and fuck their shit up. You know, yeah. So yeah, but it doesn't, it feels like, the beheading is just its own, I don't know. It's of the French Revolution, but it doesn't feel like
it. You know what it is? It's more like those people who are, and like any revolution, I think, there are the people up top who are, you know, trying to get the power, right? The
right.
Most power. So it's something like the assembly, the people up top who are, because they were the ones who decided to put the monarchy to trial and kill them. Like a lot of people within the revolution didn't want them to kill the king. They were like, why can't you just put him in a prison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were particularly cruel in the end to the royal family. I mean, they did terrible things where, you know, they separated them from their children. They put the young 8-year-old boy, I guess, like a cell away from Marie Antoinette so she could hear him while they were beating him.
Oh,
and
horrible.
Oh my God.
So we need to put them on the board, Rebecca, especially if we're talking about the beheading. Like, should we put the revolutionaries?
Like, it was something like they got like, they had like they were bloodied, or they were like, they had blood on their mind. They wanted equality, and they wanted to, you know, they didn't want the monarchy anymore, but like perhaps they were just...
Should we call them extremist revolutionaries?
Yes, actually.
And this is a question, but the monarchy was also enacting violence on the people. Right, like once they're in the cells, obviously they're not the violent perpetrators, but weren't they also being horrific? It's like they were horrific to them, they were horrific back. Kind of talking about, Amanda keeps saying like classism, which is like, I feel like that's not the right word, because that is sort of like the, that sort of puts it on the people from lower classes, whereas it feels like greed and lack of empathy and lack of, societal equality and the desire for that when you could just have a bunch of money and flour in your hair.
I think that's great. I think we should call it bloody greed.
Bloody greed.
Bloody greed.
So I think we can take karma off the list.
Yeah.
I think it's bigger than that. I actually don't think we can blame Marie Antoinette herself. What do you guys think?
For her,
is it too soon to bring her off the list?
Maybe.
No. Maybe like wake-up ceremonies should come off before Marie Antoinette.
I don't think you can, I mean, I don't think you can blame her for her own beheading. That feels logical to me.
Literally. Yeah. Doesn't make sense.
I mean, I'm really gunning for wake-up ceremonies to be what caused all of this. It's what I fully believe in, and that's the one I'll ride for.
Well, maybe we could use wake-up ceremonies to sort of represent the social bubble of the French court, like as a figurehead, or vice versa.
I feel like we fold in wake-up ceremonies to the bubble, because the bubble is what made them not take the revolution seriously soon enough.
Yeah.
I think they were just like involved in their own life.
We should definitely remove the lack of the sex pot punching bag mistress. Feels like it was never her fault, was never going to be her fault.
Yeah, I think you're right. The affair of the necklace, that was kind of a breaking point for her.
Well, the whole diamond necklace, too, just seems like one sort of rung on the ladder on this sort of journey here. It doesn't really seem like you can narrow it down to that being the very specific thing that sort of was the straw that broke the camel's back, you know. I don't think so. I think
so. You want to take that whole?
I kind of want to take that off. I don't know how you guys feel.
Yeah, I agree, because I think they were going to behead her regardless of that, especially because there was a war going on with her home country. So, which we could have put on the board as well.
The French-Austrian War came after the storming of the Bastille.
Oh, okay, so that interesting.
Not to say that they didn't already hate each other. So maybe we take. Do we take Louis and his locks off?
I wish the lock hobby could be at fault, but yeah, I think we take it off.
I mean, he was a nice guy, just really bad at his job.
Yeah, and you know, I want to take lack of education off. It just feels so the better phrasing being like people's refusal to make education available to people of other classes.
I think along those lines, we can take off Maria Theresa, because she was just doing her best to stay in power, and she couldn't have known what was going to happen.
Yeah. You know, Kris Jenner does a lot with her daughters, but it's in the world she lives in. No, I'm just kidding.
So we have the American Revolution, the social bubble, misogyny, the porno pamphlets, extremist revolutionaries, and bloody greed. I actually think that we can take the extremist revolutionaries off, because I feel like we fold them into the bloody greed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because bloody greed can be about the revolutionaries and also about the royals, too.
Right. So I also think we can take the American Revolution off the list.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. We send bloody greed to jail and we give misogyny the slap, or we send bloody greed to jail and we give the porno pamphlets a slap.
I just have one small issue with framing the revolutionaries as greedy. That's something about that. When we're talking about bloody greed, I think, can we be specific? Are we talking about the monarchy wanting to hold on to their positions, their class, the society that they have that benefits them, even in the face of starving throngs of people?
I mean, in that way, it's like, can we narrow and maybe wrap up Bloody Greed into the social bubble of the French court?
Right. The social greedy bubble and of the French court.
Is it too late to add Jeff Bezos to the board?
No.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Amanda, let us do our thing.
That really sums it up. Here's someone where if they wanted, they could give away $100,000. That's low. $100,000 a day to helping the people, and they would never feel it and still don't. And that sort of feels like with the monarchy, you know, they could have helped and really chose not to. Now, did they deserve the specific terror that came to them, you know, and their son? No, but the monarchy did deserve to fall.
Are you saying, Chelsea, that Jeff Bezos is the Marie Antoinette of our time?
Yes, I am. He is my personal Marie Antoinette without, obviously, all the hair. He is the opposite.
Get him in some of those libels, right? Get him in some of those porno.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, in all fairness, they could have, like, opened up the royal pantry. And, like, the people of Paris were starving. Why didn't they open up the royal pantry and just, like, be like, okay, guys, let's get you guys some food here.
Yeah.
Shoot some flour out of your hair.
You know, in which case, I do blame the social bubble. Because people who allow you to live in your own world and won't call out awareness, empathy, kindness as a group, that's a dangerous thing. And mm-hmm. for everyone who was shitty in high school, I say we blame it on the social bubble.
Do we give misogyny the slap? Or do we give porno pamphlets the slap?
I think because my preference would be wrapping up misogyny into the porno pamphlets. The libels, because I think that's a better visual slapping the porno pamphlets. It's more specific.
Okay. All right, I'm calling it. Porno pamphlets, you're getting the big slap. Social bubble of the French court, you're going to the alarmist jail. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of the beheading of Marie Antoinette.
I'm so happy to bring absolutely nothing substantial to this argument and have played such a big role in it. That feels nice.
After the beheading of Marie Antoinette, her body was thrown into an unmarked grave. And in 1815, her remains, along with those of Louis XVI, were transferred with due ceremony to the Abbey of St. Denis and placed in the crypt. According to HistoryChannel.com, the story of revolution and resistance in 18th century France is a complicated one, and no two historians tell the story the same way. However, it is clear that for the revolutionaries, Marie Antoinette's significance was mainly powerfully symbolic. Sadly, what Marie Antoinette was actually like was besides the point. The image of the queen was far more influential than the woman herself. Tune in next week. We'll be deciding who's to blame for the Anita Hill hearings. Follow us on Instagram at The Alarmist Podcast and on Twitter at Alarmist The to submit your ideas on who should go up on the board.
Powered by ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.